The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect that of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And good morning, everyone, and welcome to another day of Analyze This here in Paradise. It's absolutely beautiful outside. My name is Neville James. You're in tune to 93.1 FM WTJX, your NPR station here in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And a little bit somber based on a reality that the country is dealing with yesterday. The president held a memorial for that infamous number of deaths that we've passed as relates to the COVID-19 pandemic. So I'll get to that in a little bit. Let me do some housekeeping here, get our local numbers out the way, and then I'll bring on my guest for hour number one, Ms. Zulima Lake, a licensed marriage and family therapist who is practicing here locally and also in the state of Georgia. So let me do the COVID numbers, get them out the way. The big number of people tested, 46,603. We have 117 of those tests that are pending. So of the 46,486 confirmed tests, we have 2,589 positives, 43,897 negatives. So let me get a percentage there. I know it's somewhere in the 94 percentile area. 43,897 divided into 46,486, 94.4% negative rate. So we have a 5.6% positive rate. Of the 2,589 positive cases, 2,483 have recovered. Our active numbers are down to 81, and we've had 25 deaths, COVID-related deaths, since last March when we had our first official positive here in the territory. Yesterday, we had some good ratios. St. John, 4 negatives, 0 positive. St. Thomas, 41 negatives, 2 positives. So that's a 20-to-1 ratio, 20.5 to 1. And then on St. Croix, we had 159 negatives and 8 positives. That's a 19.875 to 1 ratio. So we could live with that. Okay. Overall, 204 negatives, 10 positives. So that's 20.4 to 10. And of course, you know, we want our ratio to be anywhere from 19 to 1 and up. That'll give us at 95% negative and 5 positives. Nationally, Worldometer has the big number on the mainland. Positive cases at 28,826,307 cases. They were ahead of the national number in terms of deaths. They have the deaths number at 512,590. The New York Times, which I believe works in concert with Johns Hopkins and the CDC, they have positive cases at 28.2 million. And yesterday, the deaths number officially went over the 500,000 number. New York Times has that number at 500,103 deaths. COVID tracking project nationally yesterday, 1.2 million tests, 53,000 cases. So that's under the 5%. Hospitalizations is now down to 55,403. The day before, that number was at 56,159. And deaths yesterday was at 1,235. So, trending in the right direction. Wall Street, Dow closed at 31,521.69, up 27.37, kind of flat, just under a tenth of a percent. And it was reflected with the 30 companies You had 14 who saw gains, 2 who broke even, and 14 who saw losses. So that's the 30 right there. And like I said, the president memorialized the 500,000 debt number that we passed yesterday. And finally, before I go to Ms. Lake, you know, yesterday we were speaking about the energy situation as a result of the Texas freeze. So I was doing some more research, and there's a likelihood that you're going to see some racketeering charges coming out of that. That's a dangerous and a sad situation that's taking place down there in the Lone Star State. And we'll follow up on that maybe tomorrow, because today we got a full slate with Ms. Lake, and we got the Department of Labor coming on in hour number 2. Having said that, let me go to Ms. Zalima Lake. Good morning, Ms. Lake. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. How's everything?
Everything is good. The weather is nice, like you mentioned before. It's like windy, but the sun is out.
Okay, that's good. Before I get into details with you, I got one of my forward listeners telling me about,
okay,
we only have 2 hours with you on the air. I supposed to do my homework with the COVID percentages before the show start.
See how
when you spoil these people, and then they want to take liberty or you talking to you how they want so early in the morning.
Well, I'm kind of glad, because I don't know that I could have talked for 2 hours.
So. You know what I'm saying? I done got to psych up myself to make sure that we get content and, you know, fill everything for 2 hours so the show could be nice and level. And I got to be subjected to these forward people. And worse, in this case, if I'm St. Thomas. Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, so don't worry about it. I'm sorry I had to vent while you on, but I'm going to deal with it at the appropriate time. Okay?
Okay.
So, first of all, tell us about yourself and how you got into your profession.
Okay. Well, I'm from here.
Where is here?
I was St. Croix.
Yeah, well, remember that our audience isn't just Crucian.
Oh, okay. I was born and raised in St. Croix. Mm-hmm. And I moved to the States. I moved to Georgia in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stayed there. I went to college in Georgia. I went to Valdosta State, where I got a bachelor's in sociology.
Okay.
And then I graduated from college, you know, with child. So I moved home to have a baby, and I couldn't find a job in St. Croix with a bachelor's in sociology, obviously. So I moved back to the States to then pursue my master's degree. But I knew that I would always come home. I knew that was always my passion. So I went to Mercer University in Georgia, and I got a master's in marriage and family therapy. But I stayed in Georgia. I tried to come home again at one point. But it was just, you know, bad timing. I feel like I had to stay in the States to make sure to gain as much experience as possible, so that when it was really time to come home to give back, to do everything that I wanted to do, I was 100% prepared. And so, you know, that's basically where I am now. I moved home at the end of 2019. And I opened my own practice here, doing mental health therapy, individual therapy, anger management, couples therapy. So that's basically what I do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like that you're home, but I don't really like the story, given how we let down one of ours at multiple instances. So when I say we, I mean the people that's in Croy, you know what I mean? I mean our system, you know, that you came back home with your sociology degree, and we weren't ready. That's the one gripe I had. When I graduated with my history degree back in 1987, see, I'm old.
Uh-huh.
I do the same thing. You know, I walked the streets for 20 months until they paid me a commensurate salary. And
Right.
Yeah, you know, the one problem I have with the Virgin Islands, particularly in the public sector, is they would like to tell you take what you get till you get what you want. And in doing that, you could get pigeonholed, and the next thing you know, you're locked in, and 25, 30 years later down the road, you know, look at where you are. So in your case, you decided that wasn't going to happen, and you had to back up to the States. Mercer University School of Medicine?
Yes.
This is where?
This is in Macon, Georgia, but they had a satellite program in Atlanta. So I was able to go to classes at Piedmont Hospital in Atlanta, but, you know, the main campus and where we graduated was still in Macon.
Still in Macon, okay.
Yeah.
So what was it like when you fully committed to a profession in therapy?
Wow. Yeah, that is a great question.
that's what I do. That's what I do here on Analyze This.
Right. Yeah. I could tell you that it was not as easy as I thought it was going to be, because I decided that I wanted to be a marriage therapist before I actually graduated from undergrad. I knew I was going to go to grad school, so I was applying to grad schools before I found out I was pregnant when I was graduating from undergrad. So I already knew that I wanted to do that, but I feel like it was fate that it didn't happen at that time, because to be so young, I graduated from undergrad at 21.
Okay.
So at 21, I don't think I would have made somebody a great therapist. You know, I had more things to experience. And so by the time I graduated with my master's, I was about 25, and it took a lot, because it takes a lot of, you know, to graduate from Mercer with a master's in therapy, you actually have to go to therapy, like, you know, so it was a lot of, like, self-reflection, learning yourself, and also working in environments that you didn't think. You see therapy on TV, you see private practice, you see, you know, people just sitting down listening to other people's issues. But the type of work that I had to do, I had to drive to, I've seen kids and families in the projects. I've seen people in prison. I've seen, you know, so much that I didn't think was a part of what I wanted to do, but I had to put in all that work to be able to appreciate, you know, real mental health, because it's so broad. It could be anything. Mental health could be you missing 2 days of your radio show, and they're like, hey, what's going on? And you're like, I just stressed out, you know, somebody might say, well, maybe you need to talk to somebody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But mental health could also be, you know, somebody literally trying to jump off of a roof, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's so broad, or it could even be like, I've done everything from teaching parenting skills to parents who get a kids taken away temporarily, you know, because they find marks on their body because they beat their kid or whatever, you know? So it's just so many different aspects that you kind of have to work it all to know, okay, what's your real passion? Where do you really want to focus on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot harder than I thought that it would be. I thought I would just have like a glorious, oh, I want to make this amount of money. I want to have a practice attached to my house, like on TV. But now that, you know, I've experienced all of that, I clearly do not want a practice attached to my house, you know?
The reality as opposed to what we see on TV, sometimes are, and in most instances, are two different universes. And,
right.
You know, it's going to be interesting as we go on with this discussion, because in reading your bio here, multicultural clinician with a focus on creating a safe, judgment-free environment to work collaboratively with clients. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break. We're going to get into the benefits of being multicultural.
Okay.
With Ms. Zalima Lake, practicing marriage and family therapist here in the Virgin Islands, and she's also certified up in the Empire State of the South in Georgia. We'll be back right after this. Analyze this. An absolutely gorgeous day here on St. Croix. Sun is out. water is nice and blue. We'll be back right after this.
Pleasure when I hear from someone like you who listens to our show and they say, you know, I was in a bad frame of mind when I got up, but I listened to your show and I'm not now. I think I can face the world. And then I heard something on your show that kind of changed my mind, changed my heart. I think that's why we're in business. Weekend Edition Saturday. Listen every weekend.
Weekend Edition Saturdays at 9 a.m. and Sundays at 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we are not afraid to ask the big questions, even to the guy who owns the Chicago Cubs.
Well, there's a few people that just misunderstand something about, like, why beer costs $9 or something like that.
Why does beer cost $9?
Why does a starting pitcher cost $25?
We're worth what you pay for us, which is nothing. Join us for the News Quiz from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Saturdays and Sundays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Sometimes it seems like the news industry is one big runaway train headed way too fast, destination unknown. I'm Elsa Chang. At All Things Considered, we plan our daily voyage carefully and take the time to see the important sights along the way. Don't worry, we'll still get you where you need to go. All Things Considered from NPR News. Enjoy the journey.
All Things Considered, weekdays and weekends at 6 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
And we are back here to analyze this, and we got Ms. Zuli Malik. You're a doctor? Sorry, I could call you
me?
A doctor? Are you a doctor?
No, I'm not a doctor. You're just a licensed therapist.
Just a licensed therapist. Okay.
Yeah.
So, therapist Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Your Atlanta mother, say good morning.
Oh, I know who that is.
Yeah.
Right.
The engineer said you almost get in trouble. You have to catch yourself and think about that one day, son. Okay. So, multicultural. You grew up, reared.
Right.
That's what it's kind of. People, I guess, some people get offended. You were reared here on St. Croix because you ain't an animal. You're a raised animal. You don't raise human beings. So, you were reared here on St. Croix. High school in Georgia. Right?
Uh-huh. I finished high school in Georgia, yes.
Finished high school.
11 and 12th grade.
11 and 12th. Mm-hmm. So you got your foundation and up to 10th grade here on St. Croix, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then 11 and 12th grade in Georgia. And you said you knew in high school that you wanted to get into the therapeutic field, or that happened while you were in college?
While I was in college, yeah.
While I was in college. Okay, yeah. Good. Now, the benefits, let me ask you this. What benefits do you believe you have being from the Virgin Islands and also matriculating on the mainland, island girl with the stateside flavor? What is it about that you think works to your advantage or to your favor?
Well, I think as far as the stateside flavor, what I was bringing was tons of experience because I've experienced a lot outside of this small community,
Uh-huh.
But as far as being an island girl, it definitely has makes my clients feel more comfortable. You know, I always get, because if you look at, mental health or therapy, like, the doctors on St. Croix or psychologists or whatever, a lot of them, I get from a lot of clients, like, okay, the last therapist I saw did not look like me or did not sound like me, or you know what I mean? And don't understand. I think understanding a person's culture, and for me, when I say multicultural, I don't just mean that I'm versed in my own culture. you know, because I have that sense of knowledge from experiences with other cultures as well. So it's not just about island culture. It's about Spanish culture, Indian culture. So just being able to understand a person's culture will, it's the easiest way to get to them and understand their background and why certain things are the way they are. Because what's, you know, like people said, come on, sense, and so come on. So what is normal for you is not normal for me. But I have to understand what's normal for you in order to, you know, understand where you stand and how I could get you to change or how I could get you to understand, you know, yourself. Because essentially that's what therapy is, you know, trying to focus and understand yourself in order to change. But if, you know, if you don't understand culture or if you don't respect culture, then that would be, you know, almost impossible to do.
The state of mental health on St. Croix, in your estimation, are biggest issues, and how do we go about addressing them as a people, as a territory?
That is a very good question.
You know, when you come out here, you're gonna get a question then. So.
I see.
What happened is, you're accustomed to the scenario being in the reverse. You know what I'm saying? But today, you know, we getting into lake brain stimulation. If you know what I'm saying. So you live here. For example, I give you a perfect example, right? Let me help you out here, you know, because that's what we're supposed to do. The situation with a man who was living there by Pueblo for the longest.
Right.
And the apparently either Pueblo or the government or jointly, they decided enough is enough. And they barricaded the area and he's no longer there. That situation, wasn't that an embarrassment for us as a people to have allowed that for so long?
That's a very good, was it an embarrassment for us
as a people? That's the most important part.
Let me tell you something. Yeah. There's a lot more things that could serve as an embarrassment for us as a people.
I understand that, but in that particular instance, right next to a shopping center, right across from a residential community, right on one of the main thoroughfares, Miracle Mile, and he camped out there for years.
Right. So I feel like it's more of an embarrassment for us as a people that we didn't have an alternative. We don't have somewhere for him to be. That's where the embarrassment is. The embarrassment isn't that he's there, he's using a bathroom there, he's sleeping there, his clothes pile up there, and people are seeing this sore sight when they go to the gas station or to Pueblo or whatever the case is. The embarrassment is that we don't have services for him to be. We don't really have a place. You know what I mean? Is the lack of resources is more of the embarrassment.
You know, I gonna tell you a story about that situation there. My boss here at WTJX, we had a storm that was pending in 2019, I believe it was. And because it wasn't last year, it was the year before. And Human Services actually went there, right? The morning of the storm, to basically say, look, you got to get out of here because it's going to be unsafe. We have something pending, you know. And as explained to me by my boss here at WTJX, she said the hell that they had with him. You know, he had gotten to the point where, you know, because you're mentioning our lack of resources, and he had also gotten to the point where he didn't even want any help.
No, he doesn't. Yeah, I've heard of that before. I've briefed on this situation before. They've tried to take him. The thing is when I say lack of resources, I mean like the follow up.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Yes, he doesn't want any help. But see, when it comes to how the government works, it's like everybody here is just kind of like hands up. Well, we've done this, and this is the extent that we could do. So now another government entity have to take it on. But there's not a lot of, like, follow through between the government agencies. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, for instance, the police will be like, well, we can't go because if we lock him up, we technically we can't take him to jail because mm-hmm. what crime has he committed mm-hmm. or whatever. So then it would be like, okay, so when we arrest him, we will take him to the hospital. Then the hospital is like, well, we could only keep him for 24 hours because they don't have, like, you know, much of a psych ward, quote unquote, and unquote, you know? So they will say, okay, we could only take him for 24 hours. And then what do we do with him after that? Because you can't keep anybody against their will because we don't have, like, a institution or anything like that. And technically, if he's, like, not on drugs, we can't, like, check him into the village, you know? So then it's like, what's the next, what do we do? We have no choice but to just put him back on the street. There is no other option.
Wow. You know what you're saying here is this isn't as simple as some of us believe it is.
No,
it's extremely sensitive, if not complicated, and it requires a lot of time and even a greater amount of patience.
Right, and it's also, yes, it definitely will take time and patience, but also kind of like more. It would take more collaborative efforts, as well as there's certain things in the government that could possibly be tweaked, you know, looked at, and maybe like, hey, because one thing about the Virgin Islands government is that it's they're sometimes like stranger to change, you know, like, hey, well, this has been the same way for 40 years, so this is what the law is. So we can't change this because this is how it's been for 40 years, you know? Mm-hmm. So what we could do, we can't do nothing. That's how it always been, you know? But I think that the patience and the efforts will come into looking like, well, how can we change that then? Then what do we need to do to make sure that that doesn't remain the same, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really where the brainstorming and the efforts and the patience will come in. Because if we continue to, that is hindering change. Continuing to do the same thing over and over is insanity.
And expecting the same result.
Right.
Expecting a different result.
A different result. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Let me ask you a hypothetical situation. Let's say that the federal government or anybody was willing to fork over a significant amount of money. We're not even going to use a dollar figure to help us address our mental health epidemic here in the Virgin Islands. Because that's what it is. The when I was growing up here, I grew up in the 70s, 80s. I'm a child of the 70s, 80s. We did not have the let me put it this way, the scene with the naked eyes. We did not have that number of mental health cases here on St. Croix. Now it is very, very prevalent. So hypothetically, if money was made available and you were in a position to address our mental health problem here on St. Croix, how would the resources be allocated from a priority perspective and through the eyes of Zulima Lake?
That is heavy because yeah. I've never thought about that before, because I mean technically I don't work with the government as far as what I do for therapy.
Yeah, but this is about resources, allocation of resources. I'm sure you've seen, you know, because we've already established with the situation with the man who was living there by Pueblo for the longest,
right.
That the aftercare and all that stuff. What areas do you think that we need to invest in as a people? Facilities, you're talking, should it be facilities? Should it be the counseling? Let's just hypothetically look at, you know, because you never know, it could happen tomorrow. Somebody could walk in and say, you know.
Right.
Here's the deal.
So definitely I'm going to say counseling. There is a lack of counselors on St. Croix. So I would definitely say money should be allocated to counseling, but I'm always going to bring it back, even though I don't do child therapy. You start from the youth I mainly do late adolescents and adults. Mm-hmm. But you start from the youth, and I mean, you definitely gonna make an impact on the entire community, because then if you starting from when they're young, teenage, doing these kind of real counseling from in the teenage years or before, then, you know, you won't get to the point where somebody is, you know, on the street and wanting to live on the streets, you know? So I would think that the resources should more pour into young people so that you could avoid somebody growing up into being an adult that, you know, is at this sort of disadvantage or lack of resources or whatever that the case is. As well as, because the thing is, when it comes, because I'm not like bashing the local government, I'm saying some of these things is like things coming from a national standpoint as well, too, because, you know, they're trying to, like, do away with institutions and stuff like that. So even in the States, you have people that have mental illnesses or challenges, and they're not in institutions. Mm-hmm. But what they are, they have, like, personal care homes. They have developed different kind of homes where people live in the home, but it's an actual like house. It's not an institution. A psychiatrist doesn't live there or anything. But they have people helping them with their daily care and helping them to know, to live in the community, giving them choices they could make, but helping them to be able to live. And I think there's an organization here trying to help more with that, like a nonprofit organization. It's called Collective Collaboration.
Collective Collaboration. Yeah, we had with Miss Dickinson. She was on. Right. She was on here earlier. Last
right.
year.
Right. Yeah. But it's
Karen Dickinson. Yeah.
Right. So if like, you know, more resources allocated to people actually doing the work, or to organizations actually doing the work. But that's. I guess that's what I could say for that, because
yeah. So that would be a priority area of investment,
right?
In your estimation, let's shift the conversation to marriage counseling.
Okay.
Very straightforward question. What is it about marriage that statistically, it is, if not a failed institution, a troubled institution? Statistically, way too many divorces for people who take that vow. Why is that?
Right. Well, you know, they said the number one cause of divorce is money,
mm-hmm.
right? And then infidelity. But really and truly, the number one cause of divorce is a lack of communication.
I believe that.
People don't know how to communicate, so they would have never communicated about money in the first place. You know, because they don't know how to communicate. You come in from people coming from decades and centuries of families who don't communicate. People who just say, and we could talk specifically about our culture, about Virgin Islands culture. We could talk about Black people, but it's the same. You know, things happen in your family. You don't even know why that happened. You don't know, you know. Why your grandmother used to do the things she did, or why your grandfather was the way he was. You just know that it was how it was, but nobody communicated to you why, or nobody communicated to you many specifics. So, okay, when you grow up and then you get into relationships, you know, you tend to be, you're a product of your environment. So, you know, based on nurture and nature, you're basically gonna do what your parents did and what your grandparents did, unless you make a change to do something different.
That's right. You hit that one flush on the head. When we come back, we're gonna continue the discussion about marriage, because there is value in marriage, and we don't want the public to think that there isn't. And you know, I've never been married, but mentally, you know, I could see where the value is, But I think you hit the nail on the head right off the top. That level of communication has to be optimum level, not just good, optimum level.
For sure.
So we'll be back right after this break with Zalima Lake.
It's a new year, New Year's resolutions, new financial plan. At Bank of St. Croix, we offer a suite of consumer and business services, including home and auto loans. With online banking, you can bank with us from anywhere 24/7. Bank of St. Croix has two locations, one in Gallows Bay, 340-773-8500, and one in Peters Rest, 340-713-8500. Bank of St. Croix, bankofstcroix.com.
I listen to Bullseye because no show does a better job of showcasing the best creators we have today.
It's like the liner notes on a favorite album, but for everything in culture.
It makes me happy to hear music I've never heard before, voices I'd never thought to listen to, and culture recommendations that are outside my comfort zone. That's why I listen to Bullseye. You should too.
Bullseye, 3 p.m. Sundays on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear from people who really make you think, like astrophysicist Brian Greene explaining the scientific theory that our universe is just one of many.
And the image that I like to have in mind is, imagine that our universe is like one slice of bread in a much grander cosmic loaf, with the other slices of bread being other universes.
No subject is too big for Fresh Air. Join us.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
And we are back here to analyze this. It's an absolutely gorgeous day here in Paradise, and I got practicing licensed marriage and family therapist, Ms. Zalima Lake. Native Crucian, right?
Yes.
Banya.
Banya. My brother told me to tell you hello. Fernando Webster is my brother.
For real?
Yeah, as well as my dad is Fernando, but Junior is my brother. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I like that. Tell you I said hey, love, though. That's it.
Okay.
Good thing. So, so we were talking about marriage, and isn't it, cause we've identified why statistically it isn't as successful as it could be, and we both agree communication really is what it starts. But that's just a relationship thing. That's not just a marriage thing. That's a relationship thing, right?
Right, that's relationship, right.
Right, so we established that. Shouldn't it also be about, we love each other, but we need to be prepared for this joint venture because it is till death do us part, not just until we fall out of love.
Right.
Yeah, right. So there should be, let's make sure that when we make this commitment, that we're in a position to make it last in perpetuity. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We're not just doing it because we want to say we were married. You know,
right.
and to me, you know, that's all part of the pre-commitment communication. Would you agree on that?
Right. Yeah, for sure. Okay. I would agree.
Okay, good. So, and then, you know, the joy in having children is seeing them grow up happy and healthy, right?
Yes.
And that is an important part of our, existence here.
Yes.
on God's green earth. What have you found out to be the most surprising thing when you've done marriage counseling in your career, Ms. Lake? Why? I proved this morning.
I know. Are you a therapist?
No. Yes, I am. Yes, I do it every. I do it every morning for 2 hours. You know what I'm saying? In a number of different areas. Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh. So the most surprising thing would be people's expectations of one another. Mm-hmm. People expecting other people to complete them before they have completed themselves, I think, is the most surprising thing. People expecting out of a marriage or out of a relationship something that you were not able to give yourself. You have to love yourself, understand yourself, and
preach.
Order to love somebody else, be able to even open and accept love, you have to completely love yourself. So people gain into these marriages like, you know, expecting a miracle out of another human being.
Wow.
You know?
I love it. I'm glad I asked this question. You have to like extract it out of that cranium of yours, Nika.
Right.
No, I'm not. But to me, you're absolutely correct. You know, okay, I dealt with you, right? And you dealt with me, mm-hmm. right? But
right.
The first thing we got to establish is we love ourselves and we have to love how we love ourselves, you know. We have to love how each other loves themselves. If you follow what I'm saying, you know what I'm saying. I love you, and I gonna do whatever you want me to do. I can't walk.
No.
You know what I'm saying.
Right.
It's like I love you, but I need to know that you love me for what I am, and how I am, and we could reciprocate. In that regard. But this notion that one side just totally giving in and being subservient to the other and the next one just feeling powerful, that can't work.
Right. So then you don't want a partner.
That's like a business relationship, you know what I'm saying?
And the thing is, and there is an aspect of marriage that is going to come with a bit of business,
uh-huh,
you know?
Yeah.
Because there is some logic that needs to go into, because you talk about falling in love and being in love and we should be in love for, you know, an eternity and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But you're going to fall in and out of love in a marriage.
Of course.
You know?
In a relationship.
In a relationship.
Remember,
for sure.
Marriage is a legal, right? A legally binding process that that is a contract that comes with other things with it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You could be mentally married to somebody and not legally married to them. That's possible.
True. That's true.
You know, so
that's true. When I lived in Georgia, I worked very heavily with Mexican population.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So a lot of the Spanish or Latin people in Georgia are from Mexico.
Okay.
And them, yeah, they're whoever they're with, that's their husband. Like that's their wife. They call them that, you know,
mm-hmm.
like that. But they won't be legally married. But they could be together for like a year, and that's my husband this and my husband that.
That's right.
So that's a part of their culture.
That's right.
You know.
That's right.
But I think a big part in relationships, and like I said, back to the communication piece and the self-love piece, is that even when you're falling out of love, in and out of love, communication is key, because you could communicate, hey, I feel like, you know, we're going this way and I would like to get back to this, you know, because that's where the logic and the business come in. Because if you have a business and your business losing money, but you ain't talking to your finance person or your operations person about, hey, what we need to do to get back on track, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like a relationship. If you notice, I ain't feeling this or I ain't feeling that right now, let me talk about what we need to do to, you know, to make sure we're back there and taking learning to take responsibility for a piece of that and not being like, I out of love with you, so what are you doing wrong?
Imagine that.
You know?
Yeah. It's like a finger pointing thing. You know what I'm saying? When in some instances, it's the person that asking the question that they need to ask that question to, which is themselves.
To themselves.
Yeah. So a number of different things here. Talk about, because we're talking about your experiences now, group therapy. What's that like? And what do you try to accomplish with group therapy?
Group therapy. I mainly do group therapy in like an anger management setting or for adolescents. I collaborate with other therapists on like particularly Greater Changes is a counseling agency here in the Virgin Islands owned by two Virgin Islanders, and they have a contract with Human Services. So they have, like, you know, clients in YRC, and that's mainly where the group therapy is done. Right now it's virtual because of the pandemic, so it's been virtual for almost a year now. But, yeah, so in group therapy, it's helpful for teens particularly, I would say. It's more helpful for teens to me than it is for adults because teens, they care about what one another think, you know? So if you're going to therapy as a teen and you tell somebody else, like, oh, yeah, I have a therapist or whatever, or they see that you have a therapist, they might be like, wow, partner, crazy, you know, or whatever, you know? But if you're all going to therapy, then it's like, oh, it's something we're doing as a group, so now I feel better about it. Because, you know, teens have to be like on a bandwagon. They have to feel like they're a part of something or everybody else is doing it. You know, they if they feel like it's trendy, then it's cool. So then they love coming, you know?
Got a question here from one of my regular contributors. What is her view of common law marriage?
Oh, I mean, I don't have a full view. I feel like for anybody, what works for you works for you. Whatever is comfortable for you, that you could be happy in your life with and not have to have a definition or whatever, then that's what you should do.
I like that.
Like, legal marriage isn't for everybody, but I mean, technically, legal marriage is just what, you know, $100 on a certificate.
I wish it was that simple. even though in reality, to actually have to go through the process, it really is that simple. But we all know that there's some complications that come with that. Another question: can we fashion our penal system to address rehabilitation and the mental aspect that is needed to reform an individual? And you mentioned earlier YRC. For those who are not familiar with our structure here in the Virgin Islands, she's talking about the Youth Rehabilitation Center here. So, back to the question, our penal system to address rehabilitation and the mental aspect that is needed to reform an individual based on what you've seen. Because you've been back since 2019, right?
Yeah, the end of 2019.
Yes, about 14, 15, 16 months there. About what is your take as it relates to our rehabilitation center serving that purpose and not just as a detainment area?
I think they're doing a good job, and especially for it to be right now during a pandemic, and they kind of trying to work with what they have, and they're setting up the virtual, and they're on top of things. I personally feel like they are. I don't feel like anything there is lacking, but it's like I was saying, just about the process or the follow through of stuff. And this is, like I said, this is not just the Virgin Islands government. I would like to see that, like, you know, when somebody comes out of YRC, then they have to do a certain amount of, like, family therapy, you know, because we give in therapy to these kids while they're in there and they're by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they go back to their community and their parents still doing the same thing, you know, over and over, and it's kind of hindering them from the things that they've learned in therapy, you know what I mean? Because, like I said, it's going to go back to you're only a product of your own environment. So it, you know, it's kind of, if we had more follow through as a community, and that's not just like, that's not the government's responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's the community's responsibility, you know, for us to make that more of a collaboration and do more follow up and follow through. Like, hey, this guy came out of YRC. Yeah, I'm no longer his therapist, but what about 3 months from now? Like, what about when he goes back to, you know, what he was doing before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which actually segues me to another question. Another area, which is recidivism, and our commitment as in the correction system to make sure we're truly rehabilitating those who have been incarcerated so that they don't go back into that life that you just mentioned.
Right.
You know, and the commitment is, you see, it's all about commitment, you know. That word isn't just about personal relationships. It's about everything. You know, once you have that, there's a terminology that I heard from a guy named Clark Kellogg. You know, everything for me is pretty much sports. And he used this word about 25, 30 years ago. And he said, he was talking about the team, and he was talking about and he used the word. He said, this team, they had the stick-to-itiveness, right? You know, and that's about commitment. You know what I'm saying? Even though we're struggling, you know, I'm committed to make this work. So it's really a mental thing. I mean, I don't care how much money you got, what resources you have or you don't have. You know, if you're mentally strong, you could overcome a lot of things. I think you would agree with that, Ms. Lake.
Right. No, that's very, very true. But like I, like for the, and this is a big reason why it's tough for me to see children.
Mm-hmm.
Is because, yes, okay, how can we make a mentally strong kid? We can't say that a kid is mentally strong. Our child. We can't say a child is mentally strong because then when they go back home, because I was even talking outside of criminal activity, some of the things that they're trying to run from or they're rebelling against is their parents' behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, abuse in the home, mm-hmm, or whatever, or criminal activity of the parents.
And so just because you have a difference of opinion with your child doesn't mean that you're right. Because you're the adult, you know that you're right in some sense, and I don't want to give the impression I'm taking a side here. All I'm saying is that every incident is isolated unto itself. In some instances, it might be a carryover, right? But the reality is, you got to look at it for what it was, and not, well, just because I am parent, I am right. You know, no, you are parent, you are parent, so you deserve respect. Without a doubt, you know what I'm saying? But it doesn't mean that you're always right. So, you know, I like the open-mindedness of this discussion and how you look at things. And in particular, when you said, you know, what works for that particular person or that particular union is the way it should be. There is no perfect script. And to me, that is the like we just said when we went to Sunday school, the golden text. Yeah, check the golden text of today's conversation, Ms. Lake. I enjoyed it. You know, you woke me up. I'm not a morning person, even though I'm here every day, and I haven't missed a day since we first got here. And my boys tease me about it because they know I'm not a morning person. But you woke me up this morning. You got the brain stimulating, and I wish you success. Glad you came back home. Valdosta State and Mercer College of Mercer University's Zulima Lake. Via St. Croix.
Yes.
You know, we're grateful to have her here. Jade Family Therapy, right? That's you?
Yes, Jade Family Therapy. So it's Jade Family Therapy on Instagram and on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having, I do a health happy hour every month.
Okay.
And I, so what it is, a self-care event for professionals. And, you know, you come, you eat, you do some meditation, and we talk about different avenues of self-care, different things you could be doing for self-care, different routines. I have a 6-month self-care planner right now that I'm, you know, giving out to people to help people to take care of themselves more, love themselves more, because so we could continue to give, you know, we're always giving of ourselves.
We'll reach back and we'll promote that. Thank you very much, Ms. Lake. Grateful.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
You got it. Zulima Lake. We'll be back right after this.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect that of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.